This is VSiN Prime Time, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number four of VSiN Prime Time here on this Monday evening. It's all over in Tampa as a game-ending double play wraps it up. The Oakland A's, I guess don't call them the Oakland A's, the A's, right, Will Hill? They get the win as Mason Miller out there just pumping absolute cheddar. Saw 103 pop up on the scoreboard there. So he was pumping it, and the A's get the victory over the Tampa Bay Rays by a final score of 6-4. So the lead in the AL East remains 1.5 games over the Rays for the New York Yankees. But, of course, the Blue Jays get the win tonight. So right now, it's super early, but Yankees 1.5 game lead over the Rays and a 2-game lead over the Blue Jays right now in the AL East.
Yeah, and I'm not sure who the outfielder was for the A's, but he made one of the better throws you're ever going to see. I think it was the left fielder who came up after a base hit, and the runner for the Rays was rounding third, heading for home, and he threw an absolute seed, a strike at the plate, which you don't see a lot anymore. I think that was more of a thing of past where these outfielders had great arms. You don't see these great throws from these outfielders regularly, but that was about as good a throw as you're going to see all season. And the A's were up 4-0, then it was tied 4-4 for a long time in this game. They get the base hit to go ahead, and they hang on. So tough loss here for Tampa. Tough loss for the Yankees, who lose 5-4 in Toronto. Orioles now lead 3-2 in Texas. Kansas City and Seattle scoreless. San Francisco and Arizona scoreless. And that's about it for the baseball. Quiet night here on the diamond, Timmy.
Yeah, no doubt. And our game of the night was pretty wild as the Cincinnati Reds. I mean, wild in one respect, that it did not lead to a victory for us, as the first 5-under was dead in the first inning, and the Red Sox ultimately prevailed 13-6 over the Cincinnati Reds. Garrett Crochet did go over his strikeout prop, 9 strikeouts for Crochet, but a really, for his standards, a clunky night for him, as his ERA rises to 2.26. He gives up 4 earned on 7 hits, 5 total runs, strikes out 9, so he does go over his strikeout prop. But tough night for Chase Burns, the phenom, his second career start. His first start out, he had 8 strikeouts, struck out the first 5 Yankees he faced. He was electric. Tonight, not so much. Didn't get help out from his infielder on a potential double play ball, and a rough one for Chase Burns here. Just lasts a third of an inning, Will. 7 runs, 5 of them earned, 2 walks, no strikeouts. You could have got plus money on under 5.5. I believe that closed around -155 on the over strikeout prop. So that was an easy cash if you were able to go under on Chase Burns tonight.
Yeah, that 100-1 I got for Rookie of the Year, which went down to 3-1. There was a reason I was looking for a cash out. I didn't ultimately believe it was as likely to get home as the market thought. I wasn't able to get that cash out, and now I don't think I'm ever going to get it, because I know it's only one start, but when you come up this late, I guess there's still plenty of time. But that's one that's the old Rookie of the Year resume is going to take a little bit of a hit when you only last a third of an inning in your second start here. So rough start for Burns.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So a quick update, Logan Webb on the hill. He has thrown 2 scoreless innings for the Giants, as he is third in the NL Cy Young odds. A man who is creeping up that odds board, though, behind Paul Skeens, was tremendous tonight, as Zach Wheeler, 8 scoreless innings tonight for the Philadelphia Phillies, as the Phillies get a shutout victory here this evening, as they take care of business against the San Diego Padres. So the Phillies now 50-35 on the year, Will Hill. And as you look at the NL East standings, they have a 2-game lead over the New York Mets. The Mets have dropped 3 in a row. They were swept over the weekend by the Pittsburgh Pirates. And how about the Mets this weekend? Look, I don't try to overreact to one series or anything like that, but they got absolutely embarrassed by the Pittsburgh Steelers. They were outscored 30-5 in that series over the weekend at PNC.
Yeah, I thought it was even like worse, 30-4 or 30-3 or something, but you might be right. But
30-4, you're right. I'm sorry. Math is not I was able to add up 9-9 and 12 quickly
carry
in my
the
head.
One.
But I could not but I could not add up 1-2-1. That's impressive.
Tough.
Right there.
Tough. And the Pirates win again tonight, 7-0. So the Pirates have quietly played some better baseball here the last couple weeks. But yeah, it's just a disaster of a series for the Mets. They were in good shape here. Had a 5-6 game lead not that long ago. Swept by the Rays, swept by the Braves, lost some games to Atlanta. It looked like maybe they were getting back on track. Last week they beat Atlanta on Wednesday, then again on Thursday. Thinking, all right, maybe they've they stemmed the tide, but just an awful performance in Pittsburgh. Didn't hit, didn't pitch. They're down a bunch of these pitchers in terms of injuries. I wonder if they have to infuse a little life into the team and call up a couple of these young pitchers to just try to get some live arms, try to rejuvenate the team, because they are really going through a rut now, over the last, you know, 2-3 weeks, just not hitting, not pitching, pitching injuries. Everything you think can go wrong has gone wrong here for the Mets. I still think ultimately they'll bounce back. They'll be okay. They'll be in the mix here for the East. I think the Mets and the Phillies will come down to the last weekend, but a really, really rough stretch of baseball here for the Mets.
Yeah, it is. It definitely has been. The Phillies 2 games up now after their win today. We mentioned it earlier in the show. Zach Wheeler now taking a look at the awards market. He is down to plus 350 in the NL Cy Young market. Logan Webb, who's pitching right now, 2 scoreless innings for the Giants, sits at 12-1. And Paul Skeens is minus 220 right now, Will. So would you look at plus 350, or we did mention this earlier in the show for those who missed it, probably just a little bit too short for Zach Wheeler in your eyes?
I don't mind it. I think that he's going to be he's right in the mix. He's going to be on a team that's going to be in the playoffs, unlike Skeens. He's an outstanding pitcher. I don't know. For plus 350, the thing that's almost a tiebreaker to me is, first of all, it's not that long of a number, and how long it takes for them to announce these awards. I mean, you're going to sit here and bet this at the end of June. Even if it wins, you're going through all of July, all of August, all of September, all of October, and then most of November. You're just 4.5-5 months or whatever before you cash this thing at plus 350. That's just money that you're tying up that you could be betting on, you know, NFL or college football, or, you know, a number of different things, baseball on a day-to-day basis. Now, if you have the bankroll where you can make a bet like that and just not worry about it, I understand that. And that's, you know, something, if you're betting futures, you do want to leave some part of your bankroll aside for futures and awards, things like that. It's just at plus 350. If you told me you would bet it, I wouldn't say, oh man, how could you bet that? It's a bad bet. I don't think that at all. It's just, I think the tiebreaker for me is it's so far away from cashing that I don't have much interest in the plus 350, even though, you know, by the numbers, it's probably not a terrible bet because he is going to be right in the mix here.
So how predictable would it be? So since Paul Skeens' last start, which was the Wednesday afternoon matinee in Milwaukee against Mizorowski, and the Pirates scored 2 runs in that game. Since then, as you pointed out, they've scored 7 runs tonight against the Cardinals. They've scored 37 runs, Will, in the last 4 games since Paul Skeens' last start. I think we should take a team total under tomorrow for the Pittsburgh Pirates. You know it's inevitable. They're going to not have any run support for Paul Skeens. I think it's part of the constitution that the Pittsburgh Pirates are not allowed to score a lot of runs when Paul Skeens pitches.
So he's the game Tuesday. I haven't looked much at the board here for Tuesday. He's pitching Tuesday?
He is, yeah.
That might not be a bad way to approach it. Who's he pitching against? I'm going to pull up the odds here. Start to
Andre Pallante of the Cardinals.
Yeah. Boy, he's laying $1.70. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't love laying the $1.70. I would tell you right now, if you're going to bet Skeens, who has not been great the past couple times out, wasn't great, even though he's nickel and dime, I thought, on that Brewers game, didn't hit him overly hard. If I'm going to bet the Pirates, I'm going to bet him in the first 5, if anything. Just it's hard to lay $1.70 with the Pirates, because especially if you get to a bullpen game where it's, you know, 2-2 after 5 or 6, you really don't want any part of the minus 170. But I don't know, are you actually going to pull the trigger on the under 4.5 or the other team total, or are you just thinking, you know, the way the Pirates have played here, it would just be,
it would be so Pirates. Yeah.
It would be
very on brand. Yes. Right now,
on brand is the word I was looking for. Yes.
Pirates team total under 3.5 runs tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow evening, plus 110. That's pretty short. And then if you wanted to move it up 4.5, you have to lay $1.65. I don't think I'll get there, but it would be so Pirates to go 37 runs over the last four games since Skeen started, and then just lay an absolute egg tomorrow night and have like one run of support for Paul Skeens.
It's too bad. It's starting to feel a little Troutish, where I know they played better recently, but Trout just spent so much of his career, I mean his whole career, on teams that were not any good. And not that these guys are entitled to play on good teams, but he's locked up for so long that you know you'd like to see him. Not that every great player has to go to the Dodgers or the Yankees. Not that the Yankees do that anymore, but it'd be better to see him on a competitive team in some competitive games. I mean, how much fun would Skeens in a playoff race, a playoff game be? Maybe they can get there at some point with the Pirates, but just kind of a waste to be rotting out there in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, no, it should be another good one tomorrow down in Texas. Jacob deGrom takes the hill again for the Rangers. Last time out, he faced the Orioles at Camden Yards. He threw seven scoreless innings, gave up just one hit. Jacob deGrom had a hell of a month of June. He had just a 1.41 ERA in the month of June. He really has been tremendous this year. ERA just north of two, and Jacob deGrom back out there tomorrow night. We'll dive into the full card a little bit later on in the show, but the Rangers, who are playing right now, and the Orioles leading 3-2 in the bottom of the seventh, will right now the Rangers a minus 172 favorite tomorrow against the Baltimore Orioles as Jacob deGrom takes the hill fresh off of his last start where he went seven scoreless against the same Baltimore Orioles.
And the Rangers are an interesting team to watch because they're hovering around 500. Are they a buyer? Are they a seller? Because DeGrom, you could get off that contract. If you could trade DeGrom and get a bunch of stuff back, he would A, swing a race, and B, that's an interesting option for the Rangers. Like, man, do we really trust him to stay healthy for the length of that contract? That'll be one to watch here at the trade deadline.
Hey, folks, just a reminder, start your day with an edge with the VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts, or you can listen in the VSiN Watch app.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is VSiN Prime Time here on a Monday evening. That's Will Hill. I'm Tim Murray. The big acquisition of the night as NBA free agency has started. The Denver Nuggets maybe getting a little bit better. Added Cam Johnson in a trade with the Brooklyn Nets. Saved some money as well on the cap. I believe saved $17 million on the cap as they shipped Michael Porter Jr. to the Brooklyn Nets as well as a 2032 unprotected first round picks. I would say that's the biggest move of the night. We'll run through some of the other notable moves. I know Will might fall asleep if I run through all of them. So,
well, do me a favor. Do them at 11 o'clock Eastern.
I'm out of here, man. Peace. We out of here. All right. We asked a question.
You can do them on your flight. You could tell the guy next to you on your flight all about these moves.
Yeah.
There's not much going on.
But if I'm looking next to a guy, I'm like, hey, man, if you want to fall asleep, I got you. You want me to run through the signings today? Did you hear Luke Kennard is going to the Atlanta Hawks? Ooh. All right. We asked the question. We have the answer. Ian Brown pointed this out on Twitter. The question we asked, when was the last time we saw a inside the park home run and a grand slam from the same guy? Well, here you go. Ian Brown, quite a night at Fenway. Red Sox are up for a seven spot against the Red Sox. Yeah, we know, Ian. Thank you for reminding us. Against Reds phenom Chase Burns. Willier Abreu later adds an inside the park homer and a grand slam. He is the first since Jim Tabor on July 4th, 1939, to have an inside the parker and a grand slam in the same game for Boston. Get this, Tabor's inside the parker was also a grand slam. Now, that doesn't answer our question 100% when the last time it happened in Major League Baseball, but the last time it happened in Boston, 1939, the Boston Red Sox, and haven't won a World Series in 21 years. How much longer do you think this will last year for all of our Red Sox fans?
My question was, how many times do you think this has happened in the same game and happened separately, where somebody hits a grand slam and hits it inside the parker and they can't be the same one, like happened tonight? We have, my guess was, I don't know, 5 or 10. We have our answer from Sarah Langs. Would you like to venture a guess?
I am looking at it now.
Okay. Six is the correct answer. So this was the sixth time, right?
Yep, sixth time.
There was five before this.
Oh, look at
these. That's about right. I mean, that's pretty rare. A Grand Slam and an inside the Parker, and they can't be the same homer. I mean, that's that couldn't have happened. I know we've played a lot of baseball games over the years, but that's one where, I don't know, it happening more than 5 or 10 times would have been surprising. So certainly a rare feat here for Abreu.
And it hasn't happened since 1958.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that part of it.
All right, here are the six players that have done the feat of a inside the park homer and a grand slam. And as you asked separately at S. Lang's on sports, thank you, Sarah, as always, for getting us our answer. We did predict that, right? We said Sarah would get it, and she did.
Oh, she's the best, yes.
All right. 1958, Roger Maris did it. A grand slam and an inside the Parker. Jim Tabor, who we mentioned, did it on July 4th, 1939. On August 4th, 1930, Charlie Gehringer, also July 4th. That's weird. It's happened twice on July 4th. July 4th, 1923, Everett Scott did it. And the first person to ever have an inside the park home run and a grand slam separately in a game, Will, Jocko Fields in June of 1890 did it. That's a pretty rare fraternity that Willier Abreu joins. He had an inside the Parker and then a grand slam tonight, both coming separately.
Yeah, Jocko Fields with one of the more famous same game parlay cashes in MLB history with that grand slam and home run back in, like you said, 1890. That really paid off well back in the day.
I'm looking up Jocko Fields. Born in 1864 in Cork,
Ireland. Is he still alive?
No, he's not. Lived a good life, though. Lived till 1950.
There you go.
Yeah. He played for the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Pittsburgh Burgers, the Philadelphia Phillies, and the New York Giants. Had a lifetime batting average of .271. Hell of a life there for old Jocko Fields. Oh, man. Yeah, that was that is quite the night there for Willier Abreu, the sixth player in Major League Baseball history to hit a inside the Parker and grand slam separately. That's pretty wild and pretty rarefied air there.
Yeah, certainly is. And again, it was just a wild sequence at the beginning of the game where we get a 1-2-3 first from Crochet. Looks like we're getting a double play ball from Burns and be, all right, two out, nobody on the first, we're on our way. And then after that, all I remember saying, man, if we can just get out of this with one run, we'll be in good shape. But all hell breaks loose. Burns get absolutely bombed. I have to think that there was possibly, I know I've seen some whispers of this on Twitter, some tip pitching going on because, or some pitch tipping going on because, man, they were certainly hitting the ball like they knew what was coming. And it's just hard to imagine. He went from being as dominant as he was early in his start against the Yankees to what we saw tonight, which makes some sense too, where, all right, now you got one game of film on him. You can pick things up possibly. So the Red Sox certainly teed off a Red Sox lineup that had not been hitting well in recent weeks, just absolutely buried Burns off the mound.
So I wanted to hit on this. In the first hour of the show, we had the great Paul Stone on the program, and he said in regards to the situation that has unfolded at BYU, he's adjusted BYU about 4 points with the loss of Jake Retzlaff. So if you missed this story, it's been kind of percolating here for a little while. Jake Retzlaff, the quarterback of BYU, had been accused of rape in a civil lawsuit dating back to 2023. And also what was claimed in said case was that Retzlaff said it was not, it was consensual, but because of the honor code at BYU, regardless of the allegations, which were dismissed earlier today, he is in line to be suspended for up to 7 games because of breaking of the honor code. This has happened before. We saw this happen with Brandon Davies back in 2011, a BYU team that was 27-2. He was suspended from the school then. It also happened to a running back in 1999. So Jake Retzlaff is going to hit the portal. And what's going to be interesting is where he ultimately lands. And then you got the flip side, Will, of a team in BYU that will now be turning to McKay Hillstead, who started four games at Utah State 2 years ago, or Trayson Borgay, who started eight games over 2 years at Western Michigan, or Bear Bachmeyer, who is a true freshman, enrolled early at Stanford. Once Troy Taylor was fired with everything going on at Stanford, he decided to hit the portal. He and his brother, Tiger Bachmeyer, have transferred to BYU. And the last name Bachmeyer might be familiar. He is Hank Bachmeyer's younger brother, who played for Boise State, Louisiana Tech, and Wake Forest. So what I was curious about, Will, and I reached out to Jeff Benson here at Circa and a couple other odds makers as well. What was the adjustment for BYU? So here at Circa, they went from 15 to 20 to 1 to win the conference. And what was interesting is that this was reported on Sunday afternoon, Will, and a couple of sports books kept up the 7.5 win total.
Yeah.
And DraftKings actually had it plus 140 to the under before the Pete Thamel report came out. It was reported by a reporter in Salt Lake City, and it hung up there for like 2 or 3 hours. So I did take a little shot at BYU under 7.5 at plus 140. And now you kind of have the interesting situation, Will, where if you have this ticket like I do, do you take over 6.5, where this is where the market is now, and try to thread the needle? And if they can land on seven wins, you'd middle it.
Yeah, it all depends on what you like now, how much did you bet it for, you know, all those kinds of things. But not a bad idea. I mean, chances are most of these teams in college where there's not that many games are going to be around their win total. So that's one where you can be risk-free and just go for a 2-0, and the worst you can do is 1-1. I haven't really dove into BYU yet. This week, I'm really going to start and dive into my college football prep. I think you're way ahead of me in terms of that, but not a bad way to approach it. And it's just a reminder to be nimble, be aware of these things as much as possible, because you know, quarterback injuries during the summer, sometimes these coaches retire. We saw that last year, I think, with Fresno. Situations like this, things happen, and the books can be slow to the punch, and you can get some good numbers on it.
Yeah. The one thing to know about BYU, a team that I think many of us tried to figure out times to go against, they won five games last year as an underdog. So they were a bit undervalued in the betting market, but still, I remember that night game against Kansas. They were seventh in the country, and they were only a 2-point favorite against Kansas. Kansas ended up winning that game 17-13. Worth noting, BYU avoids Arizona State, Kansas State, Baylor, and Kansas this year. They do have one of the easier Big 12 schedules out there, but they will be without their starting quarterback, and what will be interesting to see who scoops up Jake Retzlaff in the portal.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is VSiN Primetime as the Kansas City Royals late night in Seattle have taken a 1-0 lead over the Seattle Mariners as that game in the top of the fourth inning as Bobby Witt Jr., Will Hill, gets an RBI single in the top of the third to give them a lead. So 1-0 top of the fourth inning as Jack Cagliano, the former Florida Gator, is at the plate for the Kansas City Royals. Also going on right now, we've got a tie ball game, bottom of the eighth inning between the Orioles and the Rangers, and the Arizona Diamondbacks will have struck first a sacrifice bunt that brought a run home off of a fielding throwing error. So Logan Webb has allowed a run. It did end up being earned. Three strikeouts for Logan Webb right now. Bottom four, 1-0 Arizona with the lead over the San Francisco Giants. All right, let's head to our progressive guest line throughout the night. It's been perking Will up. He's been so excited about the massive moves in NBA free agency. A little tongue inserted into my cheek here. But let's help break it down more with Grant Mitchell, who joins us right now, courtesy of that progressive guest line at Mile Mitchell's, where you can follow him on social media, sports betting journalist for Forbes magazine. I would say the biggest move today, Grant, was the trade between the Brooklyn Nets and the Denver Nuggets as Cam Johnson on his way to Denver. Denver ships off Michael Porter Jr. and a first-round pick. What did you make of that move, and does that change your opinion on what this Denver team could be this upcoming season?
Well, before I get into that, I just want to issue a word of warning to everybody out there. Don't be reactionary, because after the Houston Rockets got Kevin Durant, they jumped to second in championship odds. The Denver Nuggets after this, they've jumped to second in championship odds. Let the dust settle. We are still several months away from game one of the NBA season. With that being said, I do think this was a huge deal for the Denver Nuggets. Because if we're to look at what just happened in these playoffs, the Thunder and the Pacers did go to seven games in the NBA Finals, but the Thunder's first round and conference finals opponents, really not much of a challenge. Where'd they get the biggest challenge from in the West? It was those pesky Denver Nuggets with Jamal Murray not at his best, Michael Porter Jr. playing himself out of town, Aaron Gordon with an injury, and they still went to seven games. Anytime you have the best player in the world, which Nikola Jokic is, you are always going to have a chance to win a series, even if you are severely outgunned. With Cam Johnson coming there, he provides the same level of shooting that Michael Porter Jr. did, except he's a little more dynamic as a scorer, and he's actually an above average to very, very good defender. Michael Porter Jr. was completely lost on defense. You might take a very mild step back on the boards, but with his offensive consistency and his defensive versatility, this is a huge upgrade for Denver. And of course, they did bring back Bruce Brown, who won a championship with them a couple of years ago. So it's still early, but yeah, the Nuggets, they are huge winners so far.
Grant, a lot was made of the LeBron cryptic tweet. Hey, I know you're building for the future, but I want to win. People didn't know what to make of it. I think now what we see with the Lakers are doing or not doing, I should say. Maybe now we know LeBron had word of these plans. He's not happy. I can't say I blame him. He's 40. He finished sixth in MVP. What do you make of the Lakers offseason so far?
What I make of it is there are reports coming out as of the last hour saying they are prioritizing cap space in 2027. And whether or not I agree that that is the right thing to do, that's what their moves or lack thereof. That's exactly what they indicate to me. So I think that they do kind of want to reset, recalibrate a little. Despite those reports coming out, LeBron did come back and or double back and say that, no, he's fine with where he is. He doesn't want to leave Los Angeles. So it's a situation to be monitored. I've seen that some anonymous GMs have said that he does not have much of a trade market, which I believe, because the Lakers would want some significant assets to give up LeBron. But who out there is going to want to give up a young core piece and some future draft capital for a one-year rental of a player who, while still great, is definitely way past his prime? So I think it's a situation to watch, but also one that's not really going to lead to anything, because I think the Lakers are going to be pretty dormant in this free agency period.
Grant Mitchell joining us here, courtesy of our Progressive Guest Line, as NBA free agency is underway. You know, a team that I think a lot of people applauded what they did on draft night was the Atlanta Hawks, and acquiring a unprotected first-round pick from the New Orleans Pelicans to move back 10 spots. And then you think about the trade to acquire Kristaps Porzingis. And once again, not like tonight's moves necessarily move the needle from a excitement factor, but from a betting standpoint, it's kind of interesting. In a wide-open East, Grant, you go out, you trade, or you sign and trade Nikhil Alexander-Walker, and then they add in sharpshooter Luke Kennard. So what did you make of what Atlanta did tonight? And that, is that a team that you believe is now a real contender in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, well, I'm a bit of a basketball sicko, so adding defense actually does excite me. I mean, thinking about a defensive lineup of Jalen Johnson, Dyson Daniels, and Nikhil Alexander-Walker, that's going to be stifling. I don't know how other teams plan on scoring against that lineup. Some offensive limitations, sure, but then also their big man rotation. They've got three guys to cover two positions with Kristaps, Onyeka Okongwu, and the rookie they drafted, Asa Newell, out of Georgia. This is going to be legitimately one of the best defenses in all of basketball. Zachary Risache, the reigning first pick in the draft, or first pick from last year, he can also play really good defense, and he's versatile. He can switch across multiple players. So this is definitely a team to watch in an Eastern Conference where, unfortunately, Tyrese Haliburton, Jason Tatum, Dame Lillard all suffered torn Achilles. You've got the Cleveland Cavaliers kind of alone as tier one contenders. And then there's six, seven, eight teams in tier two. And I had the Hawks in tier two before free agency even opened. I really like the moves that they have made. So I expect them to finally break out of the shackles of the play-in tournament and probably become a top six seed in the East next season.
Are all the big moves done, you think? Do we get another domino, another all-star level player on the move? Or is this pretty much the dust has settled and the teams that we see now are going to be the teams, barring some minor moves here and there, the teams that we see on opening night?
Well, if I were to think about some players with big names who could still be on the move as trade pieces, LeBron James, certainly one of those, even though I don't expect it to happen. Andrew Wiggins is someone I feel like could have some value out there. But some of these other big name players like Jaren Jackson Jr., for example, they're locking up contract extensions as, you know, free agency draws on. So if those moves are going to happen, I would probably be expecting them to happen sooner rather than later, just given how many guys are on the market right now and how desperate teams are going to be to retain and acquire those players.
As we look around and what we anticipate, you know, it is funny to think where we're at right now with this Knicks situation. They get Jordan Clarkson, which I think people are like, all right, that's a decent acquisition today, you know, to add some depth to that role, to that bench there. Still don't have a coach. So what the heck is going on in New York? And does this ultimately end? Is it going to be Mike Brown? I see that he's going back for his second interview. What do you make of this coaching disastrous situation so far?
It's a very interesting strategy to fire your head coach and then request five interviews with active coaches on other teams and be declined or deprived of the opportunity to even interview them. Normally, you want to have a plan before you make such a big change, like firing your head coach who won you multiple playoff series, got you to the conference finals. It's just something that I would have thought about. Mike Brown, I don't have any extra information here. The reports are saying Mike Brown going back for a second interview probably means he's the clubhouse favorite. I saw, and I don't know if there are legs to this, I saw that they reached out to Dawn Staley, and heck, that would be pretty cool. Bottom line is, I don't know where they were going. I wanted Jay Wright to be the guy. He said he doesn't have interest in it, so like everyone else, I'm just waiting to see what happens.
All of these moves are fun to talk about, fun to follow, but Oklahoma City ultimately is going to win back-to-back championships. True or false?
If it's them versus the field, I would probably still go with them. They've got everybody under contract. They're all of their core pieces essentially are young players. Not to mention, they might be forced into trading for another superstar just because they have too many upcoming draft picks and too many players on the roster. That happened to the Boston Celtics a few years back with Danny Ainge, and that's a situation the Thunder could find themselves in. So if Giannis doesn't like how this year goes with the Bucks, maybe a midseason trade is on the board. I don't know. It could get crazy with them.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Hey, Grant, appreciate the insight, man. Good stuff, and we'll talk to you soon.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
There he is, Grant Mitchell.
Thanks,
sports betting journalist for Forbes at Mile Mitchell is where you can find him on social media. We'll get you updated. We'll also take a look at tomorrow's slate as well as we continue to wrap things up here on VSiN Prime Time. Hey, just a reminder, folks, there's a new sports betting market in town. It's called XCUTTA, spelled X-C-U-T-T-A. XCUTTA is a sports Calcutta combining the adrenaline of live auctions and strategy of sports prognostication. And for a 3-month free bidding subscription, email support at xcutta.com and mention VSiN.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is VSiN Primetime, putting the bow on the show. Hoops Peterson is coming up next. you let me know of a tweet that it is circulating a little bit. He didn't tag me. Nathan Henry let me know I'm looking at his replies now. Nathan, you got to hit me up, bro. At one Tim Murray. So I posed the question. I was signing into my flight, and I got offered to upgrade to first class for $129, and I was going to do it, right? And I asked you the question. I think everyone agreed. The tweets came in. And I was going to do it, but apparently someone scooped it up fast, so I did not grab the first class ticket, but I was going to do it. Nathan, just a moment ago, just tweeted out, and he's tweeting a bunch of different other people out there, which is hilarious. He goes, Tim Murray should be sitting in the middle seat beside Anthony Lynn for making that bleeping, dumb bleep decision to not spend $120 and get business class. I have a lot of respect for him. Thank you. I love him, but what a dumbass. Thank you. Once again, Will, I was just slow. I was trying. I'm doing a television show, and I'm trying to go on my app and change it. I was willing to spend the money, and then he's getting Gil Alexander involved here. He says, beating the book, Tim Murray is flying to the East Coast, and they offered him a first-class ticket, and he decided what to do. The only reason I wouldn't do it, it's because you'll have to fly first class every night. I'm a little confused, but I would have done it. And also, Nathan, I appreciate the kind words. You could tweet me. I'm a big boy. If you want to, you could say the mean words to me. That's fine. At one Tim Murray is where I'm at. I would have done
it. We have a very sharp audience, but they are harsh, but they are fair. So you know what? Make me chuckle.
Once again, now that was hilarious. I'm glad you sent that to me. I was going to do it, but I was too slow. And now the conundrum is, Will, it looks like I have an open seat next to me. Do I spend $80 to get the exit row, or do I just sit in the row with no one next to me on the window and try to zonk out? If it was first class, I'm in. $129, I was all in, man.
Yeah.
$80 to go up to the exit row, we'll see.
That's tough. I keep thinking back to you. Remember, you're a Seinfeld guy, right? Remember the one where Jerry gets first class? And he's like eating ice cream. He's sitting next to the supermodel, and George is like getting into arguments with people and all crammed. So yeah, that's what I'm envisioning right now.
what was the one where Jerry was like, I've sat in first class before, so he gets the first class seat, and he makes a lane.
Yes, you don't. There. I know what I'd be missing. You don't know what you'd be missing. That's what it was. Yep.
Well, I don't think I'm gonna be hitting it up, but maybe, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I get lucky. We'll see how it all plays out. All right, we got a couple games still going on. Bottom of the ninth inning in Texas, 3-3 between the Orioles and the Rangers right now. So Josh Jung is at the plate for the Rangers, and we'll see if the Texas Rangers can take the lead here and get the walk-off victory. Tied at 1 in Seattle between the Royals and the Mariners, as that one is now an under. No, not an under yet. We'll have the home team bat, so I won't say under for the first five. And then the Diamondbacks and the Giants, 1-0, Will, as that one in the, where are we at? Fifth inning as well, as Logan Webb on the hill pitching well for the Giants at this point in time. You did mention something just a moment ago to Grant Mitchell, who was on the program, regarding LeBron James, and it doesn't seem like the Lakers, I mean, they don't really have that much flexibility when it comes to their cap situation, but LeBron picked up his option, I believe, for the first time he's ever, Will, picked up his option. 9 times he's had an opportunity. This is the 9th, and he picked it up for $52.6 million. And then there was a statement put out by his agent regarding Rich Paul, of course, regarding, as you know, we know that this is a franchise looking ahead to the future, but we want to try to win a championship now. Brian Windhorst was on ESPN Radio earlier, and this is what he had to say about the situation regarding LeBron James and if there would be a trade market out there for LeBron James.
I thought they were clear as mud. I'm not really sure what they are trying to communicate. He has 100% full control of his situation. He had an option to become a free agent today, which he bypassed. And he controls, he's one of two players in the league that has a no trade clause, LeBron and Bradley Beal. And so when it comes to trade, he has total control over whether he gets traded, what he gets traded for, et cetera. So the Lakers don't have any control. They can only receive his notification of the player option. And if he would like to be traded, he can communicate that. He hasn't done that. And so the ball's in LeBron's court. And I will just say this, that in 2025, trading a player who makes $53 million is, as LeBron now will next season, is extremely complicated, especially if you're a contending team, which is what he would probably want. So I would say right now, that's an interesting development that I'm not sure will actually lead to any change.
Yeah, I mean, look, I just don't know if what's the move that the Lakers would want, obviously, in return for LeBron, and is there a team out there who's going to spend a massive amount in the trade market to acquire LeBron, which in reality, how many years does he have left? He's only got 1 year left on his contract too, right? It's a final year. He becomes a free agent next year. So, I mean, at this point, especially too, because he's got a no trade clause. So as Brian Windhorst said there, he holds all the cards when it comes to this possibility. And if the Lakers don't want to trade him, they won't trade him. So I think this is kind of a big to do about nothing. It would be wild to see him traded, but I don't see that ultimately coming to fruition.
I wouldn't say it's impossible, but it's pretty close because you have to satisfy three parties here. You have to satisfy the Lakers who, look, if I'm the Lakers, I've got Luka, I've got a chance here to at least compete, I think. I just got a guy in LeBron who finished sixth in MVP, so I want something back. I'm not just going to placate him and trade him and give him away for nothing. I've got to make the other team happy, and I've got to make LeBron happy. So you got to satisfy three parties. Plus, you know, LeBron, his family's in LA, so it seems like he doesn't want to go elsewhere. You know, I never criticize players for taking the most money. I mean, most people in life are just going to take the most money and get as much as possible. This is one situation where I did think, like, man, LeBron, you've been in the league a long time. You've made probably over $1 billion. If you really wanted to win another championship, do you need to take every last dime of the 52 or whatever million dollars and then just leave your team no flexibility? But he did it. And, you know, I guess now it makes sense why the coded language of, you know, while the Lakers are building for the future and all that stuff where LeBron is clearly hinting at something or hinting at some displeasure. Now we're seeing the displeasure because this is an offseason. This is a free agency where they lose Finney Smith. Their team gets a little worse and doesn't look like they're going to add anything. Not that they were great guys to add, but this was a roster that needed work that wasn't that far away from at least being like a conference finals type of team. Hell, they were the three seed last year, and now they're not really doing much in prepping for 2027, that kind of thing. And LeBron said, look, I'm 40, and you're prepping for 2027. Like, what's going on here? So a lot of moving parts here. I think it ultimately lands with LeBron in L.A. still here, but I could see why he's upset at least.
Yeah. Jake LaRavia not moving the number for you. That was the move that apparently was
I like
made.
The pick. I like the kid from Arkansas. He's going to work well with Luka, catch lobs. He was underrated probably because of all the injury stuff. He missed a lot of the season, but that's a guy who could work well with Luka. But they need a lot. They need perimeter defense. They need a big. It looks like Ayton's going to be in the mix, so that'll help them. But I can see why LeBron is frustrated.
Well, you still get to play with Luka Doncic, who, by all accounts, is looking svelte this offseason. Real quickly, before we get out of here, I know Hoops Peterson certainly will be running you through the board tomorrow, Will Hill. But Paul Skeens taking the hill for the Pittsburgh Pirates, who have scored a combined 37 runs in their four games since Skeens' last start. And right now, looking at the board, Pittsburgh is a -160 favorite against the St. Louis Cardinals tomorrow evening.
Yeah, Pirates first five money line. You can put that down as a play for me. And I'll also go Astros -1.5 in Coors as the road team. They'll get the ninth at bat. So Astros -1.5 for the two plays for me, along with the Pirates first five on the money line.
And as always, our best bets brought to you by G-Bank, introducing the $500 trifecta from G-Bank. First bet, and VSIN. All you need to do is open a GBank Visa Signature credit card. In the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cash back rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and VSIN will complete the trifecta with a free VSIN Pro subscription through October 31st. VSIN.com/GBank. For Will Hill, I'm Tim Murray. Hoops Peterson is up next.